The Taliban do believe that they are in a strong position, but I think the important thing to say is that I think that they are negotiating in good faith.
An inside look at Taliban negotiations. It's Thursday, October 15th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Coming up, Australia limits refugees and an unusual musical alliance. It's all on today's VOA Asia. NATO's senior civilian representative to Afghanistan, Stefano Pontecorvo, says while both the Taliban and the Afghanistan Republic negotiation teams in Doha have entered the talks in good faith, the rigidity of the Taliban team is holding up progress. He sat down with VOA's Aisha Tanzim in Kabul to discuss what he said were unacceptably high levels of violence, the future of NATO's commitment to Afghanistan, and what the country might look like in 10 years.
You've had recent contacts with the Taliban. You were in Doha. How did you find them? Not just their attitude towards the negotiations in general, but also toward the Afghan team that they're negotiating with.
On the atmospherics, which is the easiest part to answer. The atmospherics between the team and the Afghan Republic team and the Taliban are good. They respect each other. They at times have meals with each other. And the personal interaction is good, also with the women of the team. I met the women of the team, and they also confirmed this to me. They're, by the way, they are exceptional ladies, one of which was... is a near Nobel laureate, but all four of them are exceptional ladies. So the atmospherics are very good. As concerns the talks themselves, I think both sides are in the talks in good faith. But the Taliban are a bit rigid, which is the cause of the stalemate, the current stalemate in the talks on the code of conduct, as we read in open source. I'm speaking a bit military, but it's an open source on the newspapers and so on. The talks themselves are inching forward, but I must say the Taliban attitude is generally not helpful.
You said both the teams respect each other. I've heard that the Taliban think of themselves as the victors in this negotiation. Did you get that sense?
Well, the Taliban do believe that they are in a strong position. I don't know if actually they believe that they are the victors, but I think the important thing to say is that I think that they are negotiating in good faith. What is happening off the table is very concerning. I'm referring to the increase of violence. The violence levels we've seen, what's happening in Helmand, is totally unacceptable. That is majorly Taliban driven. And it has to go down because it is inconsistent with a smooth peace negotiation and, we believe, with the U.S.-Taliban agreement itself.
You just mentioned Helmand, the level of violence. Lashkargah is a city. They're not supposed to attack the cities. Do they just get away with violating the agreement, or is there any consequence for them?
I think there will be consequences, but you know, this is a delicate matter, and you know, before you call a violation, there's you know, evidence is being ascertained, and it's not looking good. But before you pass judgment, you have to have evidence, and that is what RS and the US are gathering in this moment.
And then what about the security situation in general in the country? Does it look like it's deteriorating? Because it's not just Helmand and Lashkargah. The Taliban are trying to push, put pressure on cities, but also capital Kabul. We've seen Taliban letters. We've heard of random patrols, even though it's the outskirts. But this is the capital.
Yes. Well, I'd say that there is the level of criminality is creeping, going higher, and that's not a good sign. But again, I referred already to the level of violence. The level of violence is totally unacceptable. It has to go down. There's Afghans are being killed by the day, by IEDs, by attacks, and you know, violence calls for violence, and so there is it is a tragic situation. This has to go down. There is a level of violence that has not been seen in the last 10 years. That has to go down.
And if the level of violence doesn't go down, what happens?
I wouldn't speculate on that.
Join us tomorrow for part two of our exclusive interview with NATO Senior Civilian Representative to Afghanistan, Stefano Pontecorvo. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Thousands of protesters demand Thailand Prime Minister's resignation. Australia concerns over reported China coal import ban. In southern India, record rains kill 15. India frees top Kashmiri leader. Great Barrier Reef has lost over 50% of its coral. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories with photos, text, and video at Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The coronavirus pandemic has prompted Australia to cut its annual acceptance of refugees from 18,750 to 13,750, effective immediately. Official documents suggest the cuts to the humanitarian program will save almost $700 million. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia has a long history of accepting the displaced for resettlement. Since 1945, it's given sanctuary to more than 800,000 refugees. However, the government has said the financial consequences of the pandemic have forced it to cut the annual quota by 5,000 people to 13,750. The Refugee Council of Australia called the announcement shattering. Its chief executive is Paul Power.
We were probably expecting that there might be some short-term reduction. What we weren't expecting was that the government would cut the program over the next 3 years and use that as a budget-saving measure.
Australia closed its borders to foreign nationals, including refugees and migrants, to curb the spread of COVID-19 in March. Officials have indicated the restrictions could remain until late next year. The government has said it will spend about $9 million to help young refugees find work and adapt to life in Australia through community programs. Australia is also cutting its skilled migration program, but priority will be given to innovators, investors, and job creators as the nation faces its first recession since the early 1990s. Canberra will also insist that foreign partners of existing Australian residents pass an English language test before they're given a permanent visa. The controversial immigration requirements would apply from mid-2021. Acting Immigration Minister Alan Tudge.
We will require an applicant and a sponsor to have met functional level English or to have at least made reasonable efforts to learn English. And by reasonable efforts, we mean, for most people, that will be doing about 500 hours of free English language classes.
30% of the Australian population was born overseas. In 2019, every single country from around the world was represented in Australia. The largest groups of migrants come from England, China, and India. Australia has been built on successive waves of immigration, but it retains an uncompromising stance on asylum seekers arriving by boat who are denied entry and transported to processing camps in the South Pacific. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, thousands of Thai anti-government protesters overtook Bangkok's Democracy Monument Wednesday in a symbolic move after facing off with pro-monarchy groups as tensions rise 3 months into the protest movement. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, three countries, three musical traditions, one shared dream. Slava Lechia is a cross-country collaboration of folk musicians from Belarus, Ukraine, and the Appalachian region of the United States. The project was meant to be just about the music, but then reality got in the way. Maria Pruz shares the story.
Which side are you on?
Made up of musicians from three different countries, but with shared rural musical roots, the musical project Slava Lechia is a unique collaborative experiment. This music project began over a year ago when a cultural events manager Nadia Ilkevich invited a Belarusian folk musician Serzhuk Dohushau to perform at Ohio University.
Musicians from Brother Hill and the Hill Spirits band, a local folk band, they attended this event and they fell in love with Belarusian traditional music, with Slavic traditions. And after the concert, they jammed for 7 hours in a row. During this jam, they layered up tunes, Appalachian tunes with Belarusian traditional tunes, and they find out that it's like perfectly fit with each other. So, and someone said, this is Slava Lechia, so this is Slavic and Appalachian.
Later, musicians invited a Ukrainian folk band Turban to join the project. After multiple remote sessions, they all met in January for the first time as the US band visited Belarus and Ukraine. Their experience was filmed and later became a part of the Road to Slava Lechia documentary.
We had a lot of plans with Slava Lechia project for this August, so we had to go to Belarus to perform for art residency, where all three bands are making together performance and then perform the Sprava festival. But coronavirus and then elections in Belarus interrupted our plans. So in the end of July, we saw this news from Belarus, where they already tried to suppress protests.
To support Belarusian people, the musicians have remotely recorded a cover version of the 1930s American protest anthem, Which Side Are You On?
Oh, workers, can you take this? So tell me how you...
They kept some of the original lyrics, but also adapted parts and translated it into three languages.
For us, it was really important to have this song in three languages at the same time, so that we are, so the world and we all can feel that we are together despite of our differences, languages or distance.
The song could be heard near the Belarusian embassy in Washington, D.C., at the time of the Belarusian presidential elections in August, as well as on the Belarusian streets during the peaceful protests. The musicians say that despite the uncertainty and confusion that the pandemic has brought to the industry, now is a great time to create something new.
Music is the voice of a revolution. So right now, as an artist, if you're really wanting to impact or take a part in social change, this is the time that artists dream of, to be able to make pieces that are relevant to a movement, mm-hmm. relevant to activism, relevant to what you're fighting for.
Musicians say their primary goal was to remind people of the importance of traditions, but it has now shifted on to show how music can overcome language barriers and cultural differences, that despite borders and distance, artists can experiment and create something new. Maria Bruce for VOA News, Washington.
We're glad you were able to join us for today's VOA Asia. We continue online at Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. You can also download our full-length 25-minute VOA Asia programs at our website, voanews.com. Our thanks go to those who helped bring this program to you, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.